Well, greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on what's happened to the American farmer right after this message. You know, in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." Now, that clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Well, private business is carried on in gold and silver coin. Public business is conducted in commercial paper. Commercial paper like stocks, bonds, and Federal Reserve notes. Well, in 1965, Congress said that there's no difference in the value of gold and silver coin and clad coin or currency. And that's very true when we're dealing with banks, government, and commercial industries. But out here in the real marketplace, there's a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power of gold over paper, and there's a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes that are due on that paper money over gold. Now, God and our founding fathers did not give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew that as a matter of law, gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for us to deal in to establish our property rights. Well, our Congress and our politicians did not take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason either. They knew, and they knew full well back in 1933, that in order for them to subjugate a free people, they would first have to take away their gold and silver coin in order to take away the people's right to property and to destroy their property rights, which they did under the first blank to the Communist Manifesto. Now, if you and I intend to regain our rights, duties, and capacities, then you and I must first regain our property and property rights, because property is the legal foundation of all of our liberties. Now, let me teach you how to do just that. And this business school is now on compact disc for adult home school. Now, for more information about my private business school, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first? Now, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call right now and order yours. The number 417-273-4967, and my business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. Now, if you're online, why don't you go to the website, georgegordon.org, click onto the email machine, and then send an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about what happened to the family farmer. Remember that we had 45 million farm families, 45 million people back in 1920, farm families, people living on the farm. Today it's 1.9 million. That's a 96% reduction in 80 years. The program initiated, the policies initiated by the federal government and the USDA, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, have worked perfectly for the express purpose of driving the family farmer off the farm and taking competition out of the marketplace against agribusiness and major multinational corporations like Archer Daniels, Midland, and Cargill, and Swift, and Tyson, and Pillsbury, and the rest of them. Now, a report called the USDA Incorporated was put out some time back, and it's being reported here in the Agribusiness Examiner, which is published by A.V. Krebs. You can get a subscription to the Agribusiness Examiner. It's free. All you have to do is send your name and address to avkrebs@earthlink.net. It's an email address, avkrebs, A-V-K-R-E-B-S, at earthlink.net. I suggest, now he asks for a voluntary donation, and I suggest $25 a month. If you can't afford that, give him something, you know, $5, $10, $15, whatever you can afford. All right, going on, he says, one such is this fact, as mentioned previously, and that is USDA Incorporated was conceived by the Organization for Competitive Marketing. And since 1999, this Organization for Competitive Marketing has been a persistent critic of the practices of corporate agribusiness as they impact its members. And yet, there is an irony here, because at the organization's founding, at their convention in Kansas City, Missouri in 1998, the USDA Incorporated refused to insert any mention of the term corporate agribusiness power. So this Organization for Competitive Marketing, which claims to be opposed to agribusiness and multinational corporations, in their mission statement, they absolutely refuse to put in any mention of the term corporate agribusiness power in its mission statement or its statement of objectives. And despite the pleadings by a number of its guest speakers, this editor included to do so. Now, what does that tell you? You know, it's like the communists. They come in and they tell you one thing and they go and do exactly the opposite. Republicans and Democrats mimic communists. They run for public office and they say, I'm going to do ABC, and then they do XYZ. And because people cannot remember the promises and platforms that are made by these political parties or these politicians, or else they just don't care. That probably is about 90% of it. I don't think the average guy really cares. We presume that if somebody says, I'm an anti-communist, you presume that he must be an American and a capitalist. It doesn't seem to occur to us that this is just some more of that Hegelian dialectic where we come in to deceive you. We come in and tell you one thing and then go out and do another. We're going to control both sides of this argument. We're going to control both sides of the debate so that we can create the answer that we want. We're going to move you from where you are to where we want you to go. And that's what this organization, I think, is all about. Now, in the center of concerns, Peter Driscoll's next steps toward a shareholder revolt at USDA Incorporated essay at the conclusion of the USDA Incorporated, he acknowledges that this report seeks to connect the dots and expose an overall pattern of industry influence and its consequences for other stakeholders in the food and agriculture system. By compiling and reviewing a series of major food policy decisions at the U.S. Department of Agriculture over the past decade, under administrations of both major parties, but the report is by no means a definitive or final statement on the matter. There is much more digging to be done to detail the specific mechanisms through which food companies and trade associations use campaign contributions and other forms of influence to guarantee themselves a seat on the board of directors of USDA Incorporated. Such research will involve use of the Freedom of Information Act to request documentation of meetings between industry advocates and USDA officials and more in-depth analysis of specific decisions than is possible within the limits of an introductory report. So these boys are sitting here telling us, you know, we're Joe Sixpacks out here, and they're telling us, well, we've got to go to the FOIA and get the minutes of the meetings that the USDA is conducting with Kroger and Safeway and ADM and so on. Hang on a second. Why don't you save your breath? Both political parties are telling you that we're in favor of the American family farmer. And both Republicans and Democrats sitting in the seats of power from 1920 to 2004 have presided over the demise of 94% of the family farm population in America. Now, what more do you need? You know, if you can't figure out that the USDA, the Republicans and the Democrats are opposed to family farming and that they've got an agenda which is totally separate from anything that you might envision, you couldn't find your rectal region with both hands at high noon with a roadmap. Go on back to sleep and forget this story. Now it's time we woke up, don't you think, boys and girls? Don't you think it's time to wake up and smell the roses, pour yourself a cup of coffee, and let's get on with the business of life? If you're waiting for USDA to save your family farm, you got another guest coming. I can remember back in the 80s, there was a large number, about 250,000 farm foreclosures going on every year. What did the federal government, either under Reagan, Bush, or Clinton, or Carter, do to prevent those farm foreclosures or to ameliorate the impact of their problem? Nothing. And now you have fewer family farmers today than you had then. And all of these guys, Carter, Reagan, Bush, Clinton and Bush, all say to you, gosh, we're just out here working our hearts off for you family farmers. We just don't know what we're going to do to help you anymore. Ever occur to you that it's their help that is the problem? The minute that politics got involved in the agribusiness or in the farming industry, I won't call it agribusiness, but in the farming industry, starting at the beginning of the 20th century, it spelled the demise. That's communism. That's the five-year plan. That's the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. That's guardian ward relationship. Now, you know, the God of Israel gave us a better way than that, gave us a better program than that. And fortunately, there are a few thousand farmers out here in America that are actually making it. I mean, there are people out here that actually own their land, produce organic fruits and vegetables, organic meats, are making $100,000 to $300,000 a year and living life happily ever after. We're not having a problem. I don't have any farm subsidies. I'm not a member of the PIC program. I haven't got my hand in the trough. I'm not eating at the government trough, and the government isn't bothering me either. I'm not suffering under Hale versus Hinkle or Wickard versus Spilburn. And I want to invite you again to write for my free introductory CD package. Let me tell you a little bit more about how to do that. I've had many, many farmers come here to my school. Commercial farmers, big ones. I mean guys that are making $3, $4, $5 million a year in sales. These are agribusinesses, and they can't make it because they're the little agribusinesses. I mean, you got to be up in the $20, $30, $50 million range if you're going to make it in commercial business, commercial agribusiness today. So tuck that one away in your heart. And if you've got a family farm and you're sitting there saying, well, how am I going to hang on to my 500 or 1,000 acres? Partner, you don't need 500 or 1,000 acres. That's your problem, not the solution. That's the ag schools telling you that you got to specialize, that you got to milk cows, or you got to raise corn, or you got to have soybeans. That's nonsense. You need 40 products. You need a customer base of 100 people. You need 100 people spending $1,000 or $1,500 a piece with you so that you can go out and service those 100 customers and make $100,000 or $200,000 a year. I mean, that's where the money's at. You don't have to be growing, you know, railroad cars full of grain. What you need to have is a pickup load of sweet corn, cantaloupes, watermelon. You see these guys running around peddling that stuff all the time, don't you? You drive up Highway 99 in California, and you look off and see this little Jap family out here hoeing and working out there in their cabbages and cauliflowers. That guy's making $100,000 a year on 5 acres or more. And I'll bet you something else. I'll bet you he's not paying very much income tax on that income either. And I'll bet you it's income, and he's probably a tax evader. We've got to take a little break here. We'll be back. I got a couple of stories I want to tell you, and we'll be back with the conclusion here on this story of what happened to the American farmer when we return. Stand by. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider. An insider like John Swinton, for instance. He was the former editor of the New York Tribune. Here's what he said to the New York Press Association on February the 26th, 1936. He said, "There's no such thing as a free and independent press in America, unless it's in some country town. And there's not one of you who dares express an honest opinion because you know beforehand it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid $150 a week for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with. Others of you are paid for doing similar things. And if I should permit my honest opinions to be printed in one issue of my paper, like Othello, before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. Our business," he said, "is to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, to sell his race and his country for his daily bread. We are," he said, "the tools of rich men behind the scenes. We are intellectual prostitutes," unquote. Now, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program in this New World Order. Men and families like the Windsors, the Rockefellers, Bushes, Bundys, Carnegies, Vanderbilts, and Kissingers. That's why I contend that it's time that we wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians. And let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order nightmare and this Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000 Bible prophecy and this New World Order, why don't you call and order my 4-hour compact disc package? Remember, it's educational, entertaining, informative. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call right now to order yours. The number to call is 417-273-4967. All I need, your name and address and a telephone number. Put it on the recorder when you call in, or if you call in the daytime, you'll catch somebody here. To order that free package, that number is 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, just go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me your email request. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? georgegordon.org or 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about what happened to the family farmer, the American family farm. There's only 1.9 million farmers left in America. We have more people locked up in our prisons now than we have grown our food. 50% of our food, that is 50% of what you see in the grocery store that goes home and goes onto your table, comes from overseas. It comes from outside of our borders now. By the year 2008, America will no longer be a net exporter of food. The grains, the soybeans, the corn, the wheat that we're exporting is now those markets are being taken over by Brazil, China, and Argentina. That's right, those markets. Oh, and the Russians, I forgot to tell you about the Russians. Hey, the Russians, I think right now are producing more wheat than the United States. In fact, they can do it cheaper, and wheat farmers in the United States are planting other things. They're not planting wheat. America's dominance in agriculture is over. America's dominance in geopolitics is just about over. Not quite, but it's coming to an end. Our dominance as the world's number one economic power is just about to come to an end. Our dominance as the world's number one industrial power is a dead letter issue. We're no longer the world's number one industrial power. China has now taken over. Now, you know, since 1950, America has been on a slippery slope headed downhill. Something very dramatic has happened, and especially in agriculture, because America, with 3 million square miles of real estate, producing more than anybody else in the world, jumping into the fray and delivering foodstuffs to starving millions of people around the world for the last century, is just about to come to an end. Now, the public interest organizations that collaborated in the production and release of this paper call on like-minded colleagues as well as investigative journalists and other members of the media to further document the revolving door industry influence at the United States Department of Agriculture, and groups should also work together to develop proposals to remedy the situation. You need a proposal to remedy the situation. I propose the remedy. We go back to the law of Moses. We tell the USDA to take their corn and stuff it. And we go into organic agriculture and go back to practicing the 15 agricultural laws that Moses gave us at Mount Sinai. Agriculture is the most profitable business ever thunk up by the mind of God himself. I pointed that out. Corn has an 87,200% return. Banking doesn't have that kind of a return. Insurance doesn't have that kind of a return. Oh, it's good. And I don't deny it. Banking and insurance is good. You know, when you're getting two or three keystones, that's great. But when you get 87,000 keystones, that's unheard of, wouldn't you say? And you have to get into commercial business to screw up a profit margin of 87,200%. I mean, you really got to be a bad businessman to screw that up. But America's farmers have done it. Now, concerned members of Congress can also encourage the General Accounting Office, the GAO, and other government investigators to look more closely at the apparent conflicts of interest raised by the industry links of key appointees. Let me ask you this. What are they going to do about it after they find it? You know, we all know about the graft and corruption that's going on. Nothing's been done about it over the last 50 years. What makes you think that anything's going to be done over the next 50? You know, people have been telling me, if we could just get this message out, so that you good people out there that are listening to me right now can vote the bad guys out and vote the good guys in, America will live happily ever after. Isn't that the message that's being spouted off on talk radio? What kind of nonsense is that? We've been doing that now for 50 years and nothing's changed and it's got worse. Hasn't it occurred to us yet that politics is the problem, not the solution? And yet they keep telling us, oh, if you get out and vote, boy, that'll make a difference. Now, I want you to tell me something. Write me an email, would you? I want you to explain to me how Skull and Bones World New World Order Bush is going to be better for America and better for you than Skull and Bones New World Order Kerry. Can you explain that to me? How a choice between one witch or another witch, a couple of New World Order people, is going to make a difference? These people have an agenda. It doesn't include you and me. Well, you can count me out. I'm not going to get involved with Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein. Never occurred to you that when you go down and register to vote that you create a guardian ward relationship? Hasn't anybody ever told you that voting is a franchise? A franchise is a privilege? Where do rights come from? Voting? Your rights come from property. Where does property come from? It comes from thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not steal is the basis of all personal property rights. Without thou shalt not steal, you can't own anything. And this government over here, you know, the one you keep voting for, aren't those the people that teach sex education in school, fund abortion, and kick the Bible and God out of your public schools? Aren't these the same people that have been dumbing down your kids? I mean, you got millions of people. I think it's 40 million people out there in America that can't read and write. Talk about dumbed down. And you're telling me that what we need, this is Bill Clinton, he said, what we need is smaller classes and more money for school teachers. You know where I'm from, if you are working for somebody and you turn in a bad performance, do you get a raise? Think about that. Go to work in the morning and break things up and lose money for the company, and then come in and say to the boss, gee, if you give me a raise, I'd perform better. See how that works out. The logic that I see with Bill Clinton, he says, the school teachers of America can't teach Johnny to read. He can't write. He can't do arithmetic. Our classes are too big, so double my wages, and then I'll teach him to read, do math, and write. Isn't it that you got to do the work before you get the pay? I don't know. I guess government doesn't require any work. You just go in there to put in your time. Doesn't the USDA and don't the officials there have to perform? Have they performed over the last 80 years? Their mission, remember, was to serve the family farmer. It was to preserve intact the family farm. And in 80 years, they threw 94% of your 96% off the land. And now, are you telling me that what we need is more money for the USDA? They get $71 billion a year for 114,000 employees. And there's 16 of those bureaucrats, excuse me, there's 16 farmers for every one of those bureaucrats. You got one bureaucrat for each 16 farmers. You don't have that good a ratio in your public schools. You got more like 30 kids for a teacher. Come on, give me a break, would you? Concerned members of Congress can also encourage the General Accounting Office and other government investigators to look more closely at the apparent conflicts of interest raised by the industry and the links of these key appointees. Hell, I've already reported enough to you to make you mad as hell, haven't I? No, you don't need to write a letter to your congressman. You need to take action for yourself. You need to take action. Now, dominant anti-food companies have legitimate interests in the USDA policy, but their objectives must not be allowed to violate the rights or drown out the voices of other key constituencies. Big agribusiness has used the appointment of food industry executives and advocates to turn the People's Department into the USDA Incorporated. The People's Department? Come on. Give me a break, would you? The USDA is the People's Department. And if you believe that, I've got this watch. And as long as the food industry monopolizes the debate, there is little prospect of meaningful reform in farm and agricultural trade policy or movement toward a more sustainable food system. But there is still time for the majority shareholders in this enterprise, taxpayers, consumers, farmers, and proponents of a fair, safe, and sustainable food system, to replace the de facto board of industry-friendly directors with representatives from all appropriate constituencies. It's time for a shareholder revolt at USDA Incorporated. Let me describe the shareholder revolt that I engineered. I woke up one day and I said, you know, this thing doesn't work. I think I'll change. So I went out and I talked to 100 people and I said, let me ask you something. If I could produce meat, milk, butter, and eggs, if I can produce tomatoes and cucumbers and other foodstuffs for you, all organic, with no bypass protein, no shots, no pesticides, no inorganic fertilizers, and deliver that to you for the same price that Kroger Safeway and the supermarket produces it and delivers it to you for, would you buy it from me? I have yet in 22 years to hear one person say to me, no, no, Gordon, that's too much. For you to deliver a superior product, for you to deliver organic food, for you to deliver food that doesn't have bypass protein, chemicals, dyes, and sprays on it, and you're going to deliver it for the same price that I pay for it already down at Kroger's? And that's all you got to do. I get the retail price, boys and girls. I'm not selling this crap out here at some kind of a discount to a buyer who sells it to a wholesaler, who sells it to a somebody who then sells it to a manufacturer, who sells it to Kraft, who then sells it to Kroger. It's time that we farmers got the retail price from the retail customer for a superior product, right from my free General Law CD package, and I'll tell you how to do that. Hey, I got to take another quick break here. Stand by. We'll be right back. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The genocidal policy of Global 2000 and of the New World Order are the greatest threats to our lives, our liberties, and our property since Noah's flood. And that's just not my opinion either. You know, Jesus of Nazareth held the same view when he said in Matthew 24, verse 22, that except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved alive. Now, there are 64 life-threatening problems described in Scripture detailing this New World Order and their Global 2000 genocide plan, and the Scripture teaches preparation for this great tribulation, not apathy and indifference. That's why I contend that it's time that you and I wise up and start listening more to the God of Israel and stop following after all of these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians. You know, guys like Ted Kennedy, Arlen Specter, Hillary, or that guy John in the Justice Department, and let you and I prepare to live through and survive this Global 2000 and New World Order nightmare. Now, to do just that, why don't you call, write, or email the law school and ask for our free General Law CD package. Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call right now to order yours. The number is 417-273-4967. And my subsistence and survival school is also available in compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to the website. It's georgegordon.org and click onto the email. Send me an email request for the General Law CD package. That's georgegordon.org. Or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're taking an article here from the Agribusiness Examiner. You can get a copy. Well, you can get a subscription. Let's try that. Once you get a subscription to the Agribusiness Examiner, try it out and see if you like it. The worst thing that can happen is that it's no good. You don't like it. It's a waste of your time. And just tell Krebs to cancel it. That's all. Just send an email to avkrebs, A-V-K-R-E-B-S. It's easy enough. avkrebs@earthlink.net. avkrebs@earthlink.net. Send your name, address, and phone number. Tell me. Send me a copy. I heard about it on Gordon. I heard Gordon talking about it on the Law Hour. And I don't care whether you're a housewife in New York or you're a plumber in California or what you happen to be doing or where you happen to live. We all have a stake in the U.S. Department of Agriculture. It's the second biggest bureaucracy in the federal government, and you're paying taxes to support it. Even if you're buying your chicken McNuggets down at McDonald's, McDonald's is paying the income tax. They collect it from you and pay it over to the government to support these bureaucrats who are out here creating a new world order for you, indoctrinating you and creating a socialist communist utopia for you to live in. And if you want to buy that, get on board. If you don't want to buy it, then get off. That's the logical thing to do. Get off. Driscoll's challenge is well taken. Despite the fact that much information concerning the inner workings of the USDA throughout its history is already available and should have been a part of this USDA Incorporated report. Well, the reason that it's not a part of the report is because this USDA Incorporated is a double agent. Never occurred to you that the USDA Incorporated is working for the USDA? You know, we Americans seem to be an awful gullible people. We don't seem to grasp information and disinformation. Let me tell you a little story here about disinformation. You know, it can be more valuable than information. We like to think of, oh, President Bush is a conservative. Can you tell me one conservative thing about President Bush? I've seen flaming radical liberals like FDR and Jimmy Carter are more conservative or were more conservative than George Bush. This guy's never vetoed a single spending bill. You can't call him a fiscal conservative now, can you? He's presiding over the biggest budget deficits in the history of the nation. You call that fiscal conservative? I mean, come on, guys, give me a break, would you? But we seem to believe that, oh, this guy Kerry, you know, he's a real radical liberal, a New England Democrat. I find it hard to believe that Kerry can be any further to the left than George Bush. I don't know, maybe he could be. By God, if that guy's further to the left than Bush, I mean, we're going to be in the bleachers, aren't we? Now, it's that type of comprehensive review that is long overdue and should not simply be confronted piecemeal and narrowly confined as it is in the USDA Incorporated, or should it be sacrificed in the name of capitalizing on a fickle public's here-today-gone-tomorrow food concerns? Earlier, it was noted that if the USDA, that is, Department of Agriculture, is to be reformed, or in the words of USDA Incorporated, a stakeholders' revolt is to take place with authentic social, economic, political change as its goal, farmers as well as consumers and labor need not only assert but actively pursue that fundamental populist principle that says a society cannot have true political democracy without genuine economic democracy. What a pile of crap. Listen, there wasn't a single signer of the Declaration of Independence or a signer of our Constitution that had one good word about a democracy. All they called it was mob rule. Our government was a republic. It has been converted into a democracy, and democracy is your problem, not your solution. Democracy is the stepping stone between republic and communist socialism. You're simply standing on the stepping stone. I suggest that we step back. Don't take a step forward to socialism. Take a step back. I think that the Mosaic Law and the Common Law is a better program. And that's part of the trap. You see, if we can get you involved in the political process, we can neutralize you. America's farmers have been neutralized from 1920 on. They've never put up any kind of resistance or fight. They have been led directly into the big clearing in the center of the swamp. They have been fed free corn from 1920 on. All the government did was build a fence around them and close the gate. There's never been any resistance from America's farmers, and that's because they're a part of the problem. They're not the solution, they're the problem. Now, watch this. What happens to the few hogs that refuse to eat the free corn? What happens to some of the hogs who wake up and recognize that this guy is building a fence around us? Yes, we have participated in the free corn. Now let's get out there and start hustling for ourselves. Now, I'm a farmer and I hustle for myself. I don't take any free corn from government. I'm not trying to reform the USDA. I'm not trying to reform the government public school system. There's nothing to reform. What do you do with a barrel of rotten apples? What do you do with a dead body? You bury it. There isn't anything to reform there. You got a kid in public school, jerk him out and educate him at home, assuming that you love him and want him to learn how to read and write. If you can't make it out here in agribusiness, why don't you quit agribusiness and go back to organic farming? Why don't you go back to something that makes money? There's no money in agribusiness. Well, not unless you're ADM or Cargill. As long as you're trying to reform it, then you're not doing anything constructive to solve the problem. There's no reforming the public school system. People have been talking about and trying to reform the public school system for 50 years. The public school system is working perfectly. There's nothing wrong with our public school system. It's designed, and its intention is to dumb down your kid. We don't want people coming out of public school that can think for themselves. And there aren't any coming out of public schools that can think for themselves. And you can rest assured that the Ted Kennedys and the Dianne Feinsteins and Barbara Boxers are not educating their children in public school. They got them in private school, or they educate them at home with a private tutor. That's what I did with my children, and my children can read and write. If I'd have sent them to public school, they'd all be stupid. Well, that's just where reality's at, and it's time for us to wake up and face that reality. Now, it is that type of comprehensive review that is long overdue and should not simply be confronted piecemeal. Earlier, it was noted that if the USDA is to be reformed, or in the words of the USDA Incorporated, a stakeholders' revolt, I'm not revolting against anybody. I'm not going to waste 1 minute of my time trying to reform the USDA or to fight with the government. I'm not going to fight with the trapper. I'm not going to go in here and try to convince all the rest of the hogs that they're making a mistake taking the free corn. Hell, if they want the free corn and they want to go get trapped in the big pen, I don't care. It's no skin off my back. I'm not going in there. I'm not eating the corn. I'm not going in. And I'm not trying to reform it, and I'm not going to try to stop the trapper from trapping all the rest of you hogs out there. If that's what you want, get after it. Now, for a few people, that is a few of the wild hogs of the Okefenokee that don't want to get trapped, you know, your common sense says, you want to get in there and get the free corn? You want to try to reform that trapper, do you? You want to try to persuade him to work in the best interests of the wild hogs of the Okefenokee? Come on, guys. The trapper's point, the trapper's purpose is to capture all the hogs and send them off to market. That's where the profit's at. The profit's at ADM. The profit's at Cargill and Tyson, Safeway and Kroger. There's no profit out here in wild hogs rooting around, supporting themselves, eating snakes, and rooting around for roots and eating acorns. They know that. But that's where your profit is. That's where your livelihood is. It's called the rugged American independence. It's the independence of families, family units, family farmers. Oh, there's a few of us family farmers that didn't take the bait. There's a few of us, not many. We're not complaining. Now, as the prominent authoritative populist historian Lawrence Goodwin reminds us, the first step is to take control of the past and use it to justify the revolution. American history, in that sense, begins with the Declaration of Independence. People need to understand that the type of culture that a progressive populist agenda seeks to create is one that not only receives its validity from our revolutionary past, but is structured around the democratic promise that the same revolution envisioned. You know, you take a look at the difference between Republican and Democrat. Can you see any difference? They call them Republicrats. I don't see any difference in the political process. They've got an agenda. And the democracy is not our salvation. It's our ruin. It's our demise. If you're going to save yourself, that's easy enough to do. And we're going to talk about that. I'll show you what these 15 economic laws are and how it is that when we practice these economic laws, even to a lesser degree, we Americans reap the benefits. The problem that we're facing in America today is the violation of too many laws. The more laws you violate, the poorer you become. There's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. If there was, you wouldn't have a law. You'd have a suggestion. God didn't tell you, you know, to sacrifice the firstborn of every heifer for no good purpose. He didn't tell you to tithe for no good reason. You know, he didn't give you a law that says thou shalt not steal because he wanted to spoil your fun, or tell you thou shalt not commit adultery because he didn't have your best interests at heart. Every law has a penalty. AIDS, herpes, and VD, poverty, death, destruction, the loss of your family farm. You know, these are penalties that we're paying here in America for the violation of these laws. It's time that we got to know what those laws were or get back to practicing them. You know, great-granddad wasn't having a problem. Great-great-granddad wasn't having a problem. It's your dad and his dad that had the problem and passed it on to you. Hey, I'll be back with the Levitical priesthood of Tennessee when we come back. I've got another little story to tell you about what goes on here in the judicial system and how this judicial system is patterned after the Bible. Crazy as that sounds. The judge wearing his long flowing robes, who is he? He's a Levitical priest. Stand by and I'll show you why right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, back in 1970, the world food supply was 73 days for every man, woman, and child on planet Earth. Today, it's down to less than 38 days. Now, we Americans produce grain for export, all right, but then we turn around and buy grapes from Chile, tomatoes from Mexico, and berries from Guatemala. Our food supply in the United States is in the hands of foreigners and multinational corporations who support the Global 2000 Population Reduction Program. Now, this globalization may be good for business, I don't deny it, but globalization is not good for you and it's not good for me. Back in 1940, we all had a pantry full of food to feed our families for a year. Today, we have a 3-day supply in our refrigerators and we believe in our supermarket system of just-in-time delivery to feed us all. In over the past 60 years, we Americans have traded a 1-year food supply for 3 days. I don't call that progress. And these global 2,000 mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians plan to use famine, plague, disease, and pestilence to reduce Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years, or so they tell us through the Club of Rome, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergers. These evil madmen with their global 2,000 genocide agenda have a cause that they're willing to die for. And I say let them die for their cause and let you and I live for ours. And let me show you from the scriptures how to be a live survivor instead of a dead victim. Now, to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number is 417-273-4967. And remember, my subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, just go to the website. That's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, I said we'd tell you about the Levitical priesthood of Tennessee. You ever wonder about a judge in a courtroom? Take a look at one the next time you're in the courthouse. This guy's wearing a dress. Now, if you see a woman judge wearing a dress, that doesn't raise eyebrows. But, you know, I could tell when I was just a kid that there was something different about these people that we call judges. In fact, our Chief Justice Rehnquist, when he was presiding, remember, over the impeachment of Bill Clinton, he not only wore a dress, he had chevrons on his dress. It's kind of like a dictator in a little Lilliputia country in Africa wearing a lot of gold braid and medals on his chest. Did you ever think about that? Well, I did. I was reading Blackstone's commentaries and putting together some of the correlations between life today, law today, and the common law of the Middle Ages, and I traced it on back to the law of Moses. I was looking at land and land law. But, you know, those judges are Levitical priests, and we have a priesthood in America I mean, these guys are religious, and they preside over our law, our legal system, and it's a religious program. Not only are we practicing communists in this country, we are religious practicing communists. Let me tell you why. A preacher approached me one time in Suwanee, Tennessee, some years ago. I was there on a speaking engagement, and I was eating breakfast. And he came up to my table and asked if he could sit down and talk to me, and I said, well, sit down. And he did, and he asked me, Mr. Gordon, is it true that you practice the law of Moses? And I replied that it was true. And I was then asked if I practiced the sacrificial laws. You know, do I kill little lambies and spread their blood on the doorposts and burn it on the altar? Now, you see, that assumes facts not in evidence, and it is a forked question because it makes assumptions that may or may not be true. You know, I recognize those kinds of questions when people ask them. And so when he asked me this forked question, it's kind of like, are you still beating your wife on Wednesday? It doesn't make any difference how you answer it. If you answer it yes or no, you've condemned yourself, and it assumes facts that may or may not be true. So, perceiving his craftiness and asking me this forked question, I jumped the gun on him and I asked him if he practiced the Levitical priesthood in Tennessee. And he emphatically denied that he did any such thing. And he proceeded to preach me a fire and brimstone sermon about Christ crucified and how Jesus did away with the sacrificial laws and the law of Moses. The law of Moses is nailed to the cross with Jesus. I can see that this young fellow was a Christian in distress over doctrine, so I apologized for my outrageous suggestion that he might be a practitioner of the sacrificial system of Tennessee. And I explained to him that I was a stranger from a far, far land called Idaho, and that I had heard there that the people of Tennessee practiced the Levitical priesthood, sacrifices, heave offerings, and they did it under another name called the judicial system. He looked at me for a couple of seconds as if I'd just announced that I was Mork from Mork. So I asked him if they had any state highway patrolmen there in Tennessee. And he said, well, yes, they did. And I then asked him if they had police, lawyers, judges, courts, courthouses, courtrooms, with bars and benches and fines for criminal activities. And once again, he said, yeah, we have that here in Tennessee. And the rest of the people of Tennessee did have these, and that they made up what they called in Tennessee the judicial system of the state of Tennessee. So I looked at him and I said that they had told me the truth in that far, far land called Idaho, that in fact the people of Tennessee were indeed a religious lot. And once more he gave me that strange look and he asked how the judicial system was religious. So I told him this story. Let's assume you're driving down the road at 80 miles an hour, and Ranger Rick, ever vigilant and looking for crimes, sees you and roars off in hot pursuit. Well, when he catches up with you, stops you, and he asks you for his driver's license, and then notes that your driver's license does not give you permission to drive at 80 miles an hour. He then proceeds to arrest you and takes you to the nearest jail from where you are brought before the judge, sitting on the bench, behind the bar, in the courtroom, which is in the courthouse. Just ask yourself, is that the way you do it up in New York, Illinois, Florida, California? It's the way they do it up in Idaho. It's the way they do it in Tennessee. Now, when you're in the courthouse in front of the judge, remember, standing down there looking up at the judge as he stands on his high pedestal. Now, you are standing there beside your lawyer who is before the bench and behind the bar to enter a plea of guilty. Sometimes you can plead not guilty, but you know, it doesn't really make any difference whether you plead guilty or not guilty. From the time you plead not guilty on, you can't win. And so most people, knowing that, they don't know why, but they know that, and so they just plead guilty, give the judge a lying, talking bull story, and take their fine and their medicine and walk out the door. They complain a lot, but they don't know what else to do about it. Well, the judge gives you a fine to pay, and then he assesses court costs. Have you ever asked yourself, well, when he gives me a fine, why do we have a separate thing called court costs? What's that all about? Or have you ever seen court costs imposed without a fine? And have you ever seen a fine imposed without court costs? You can have a suspension of the fine, but you can never have a suspension of the court costs. You ever wonder why it is? It's kind of like watching a bride walking down the aisle with her father. Have you ever seen the groom walking down the aisle on the arm of his mother? Have you ever asked yourself, why do we have these strange customs in our land? Nobody, it seems, knows why we do these things, but we all do them. And it doesn't change from Tennessee to California to New York or Florida. They'll do the same thing. You got a judge, he's wearing a dress. How come he doesn't wear a top hat or a clown suit? Why is it that he's wearing this black robe? Did you ever notice the robe's always black? How come it isn't red, white, green, blue, purple? Well, we have reasons for that. And if you don't like this decision that you get out of this judge, You can appeal to the Supreme Court. This is called the judicial system or the civil service. Back in olden times, this system was called the Levitical priesthood, and it worked in exactly the same way that your judicial system does today. You see, the policeman today is the high priest servant. Do you remember Peter cut off the high priest servant's ear, who was constantly looking for sin? Well, sin is the transgression of the law, we see in 1 John 3, verse 4. So when the high priest servant uncovers your sin, he arrests you and he puts you in ward. He puts you in custody in the temple, in the jail, which we today call the jail. It used to be called a dungeon, and it's located in the courthouse. That courthouse is the temple. The courthouse is designed like the temples of ancient Rome and Greece. And he sits in the town square where the high priest conducts the temple sacrifices in the holy place called the courtroom. You, of course, will recognize the high priest in the holy place by his long black robes. This high priest that we today call a judge sits behind the altar, and that altar today is called a bench, which is behind the veil. This veil is in the temple, in the holy place. Today it's called the bar. To pass this bar, this veil, and approach the high priest requires an intercessor. You Catholics can understand that, an intercessor. You can't just walk up to God. You've got to have an intercessor called Mary. That's your lawyer, who will help you in your prayer to the high priest. Today we call that a plea to the judge. In your plea about your sin, your crime. Sin is a crime, you see. And when you pray that you're guilty of this sin, you become a sinner. Today we call you a criminal. The high priest then imposes a sacrifice of one ram of the first year, which is called the sin offering in the Bible. Today we call it a fine. This judge also imposes a heave offering of two turtle doves. Today we call that court costs. That's the judge's retirement fund. If you think you got a raw deal, you can go to Moses through the Aaronic priesthood in the Holy of Holies. That's called an appeal to your state Supreme Court. This system of law is called the Levitical priesthood, better known today as the civil service or the judicial system. So I closed by chiding this Christian preacher a little by reminding him that he practices the sacrificial system of the state of Tennessee every time he goes into court. You Christians all practice this religious observance. Tennessee is a sovereign. Tennessee is a god. A sovereign makes law. Tennessee is a lawmaker. A lawmaker is a god. To violate his law is a sin. A sin requires a sacrifice as a matter of law, whether it be civil law or common law. And people who practice the religion of the United States make sacrifices to their god, either voluntarily or involuntarily. You've been listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to my website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on my website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Hey, there's the signal that says my time is up. I'll have to leave it right there. I'll see you back here again tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing. So until then, goodbye, friends.